question about not only being Pensacola's airport, but our region's airport. We were able to yet again reaffirm that on Monday. We had huge crowds all weekend, and that culminated yesterday with the busiest day in the history of the airport. We had about 15,400 total passengers in and out. And the second busiest day of all time was July 7th of last year.
Just some random Monday in May, and we have the busiest day in the history of the airport. Oh, my God. I don't know what it's going to be like when we actually get into the vacation season coming up soon. I will say the 12th Avenue lot, the one that they just paved, earlier this year, last year, I forget now, it was jacked, totally full on Sunday. The Grassy Knoll lot up by the fire station north of Langley, that was not full, but, you know, just wait. Joining us now, we have D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
I still cannot believe, I mean, we must be looking at record-breaking summer this year, and I just, you know, we can't build that second terminal fast enough.
Yeah, if you recall the big issues we had with TSA, I think it's a perfect example. Last year, we had to, thanks to Rick Scott, really urged the TSA to get, we had, I think, 8 emergency folks come in like the next day. And then after the assessment was done, the assessment was basically, oh, yeah, it looks like you need, 2 more supervisors, 8 more people, and a couple more machines. You know, it's kind of one of those, not because they didn't want to help, but it was like we've grown so quickly that even, it caught the TSA by surprise, frankly. I mean, to put it, I guess, as simply as possible, I think that's what happened last year. So ever since then, we've been in, we had that rough patch, right, in the spring, summer-ish last year. And then ever since then, all in all, and again, this is something we measure by the hour. So I'm certainly proud of our team. Actually, when I flew to I'm in Fort Myers today for a CareerSource Florida board meeting. When I flew out yesterday, I had an airport employee stop me and say, did you see what happened? They were very proud of the idea of how many people came through and how good a job they did. And they should be.
That's
not only our TSA staff, but our airport staff as well.
Yeah, I mean, processing 762 screenings in an hour when full capacity is 600 is pretty good. 31-minute delay at max, average delay of 13 minutes for – I mean, that's – again, those are all for the biggest day in the history of the airport. That would have been the airport would have shut down last year under these circumstances a year ago. But, yeah, no, it's largely been remedied. And great credit to you, to the airport, to TSA, to everybody responding to the crisis. You said you're in Fort Myers for CareerSource Florida. You're there to, be on a panel to talk about, young adult flight from municipalities. Is that it?
Yeah, so I'm part of the CareerSource Florida board, which for folks who don't know what that is, that's the workforce development efforts in the state of Florida. So all, think about CareerSource Escarosa, you hear that around our neck of the woods. That's one chapter of the larger state organization. So it's run through the Department of Commerce, and so I'm on a panel with Alex Kelly, the head of Florida Commerce, and a couple others from the Florida Chamber. And it's to have a conversation. Florida Chamber just came out with some data that said that we're actually seeing a net zero migration with ages 25 to 34. Now, it's probably too early to say that's a trend. But what you can say is, remember, we pump our chest, rightfully so, here in the state of Florida about how many people are moving here post-COVID. But here's this one subset. And the interesting conversation is why. And one, is it going to actually become a trend, or is it just an anomaly? And two is why.
Is that a decline or an increase? Like, what has it been previously if it's at zero now?
Oh, it's been increasing.
Okay, I wanted to be sure that was right. Okay.
Way more people coming to Florida. But the weird, when we just got this recent data, the Florida Chamber does a great job of measuring these things. When we just got this recent data, the age bracket of 25 to 34 last year was zero. We had just as many people leaving as we had coming in within that subset. And so there's just a little, alarm is not the right word, but it's to speculate as to why that is. Is it cost of living? Is it insurance? Is it health care? Is it child care, which is obviously something I'm going to be talking about down here, because that's the age where you have young children. Do you need to be able to afford child care and a house and insurance? And is it easier to do in the states that people are leaving to in that age bracket, which is South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Texas? Is it easier to make ends meet in those states versus Florida? So So interesting conversation. Glad to be part of it, and we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, big concerns, as you said, everything from the price of housing to the availability of childcare to the cost of home insurance or car insurance or medical insurance or, you know, like everything. It seems like it costs so much.
Right.
You mentioned it, but I do want to make sure people are aware. Childcare access is something that you have, what, convened kind of a summit on, and the idea is to talk with the people who work in this space and see what can the city do either to facilitate, to create, or to get out of the way so that we can have more childcare providers so that people can work, right?
That's right. And the way I put it is there's two truths about childcare access. Number one is we all agree in our community. I've never had a person say we got too much childcare access. I don't think that's happened. Same kind of like housing. And then secondly is childcare has a positive impact on quality of life, as we all know. That's common sense. It's got an impact. Quality childcare has an impact on education, which we've talked about in many different iterations in our community for years and years, and we know that that's a struggle for us, education, young education. And last is an economic development. So if you don't have kids, you don't even care about the first two. Well, then what you should care about is we want talented people to move here. Then we need access to childcare at all levels. And again, this is not just somebody may say, hey, listen, I don't want to subsidize another program. I don't want – well, we're talking about, like housing, childcare access at all levels. We have an access problem for people that are willing to pay full market rate that don't have enough places to put their kids so they can go be an engineer or an architect or a construction worker. To me, taking on childcare is really – it's one of those rare topics that you get to actually kind of try to solve or improve three issues in one. And that's why I think it's a very interesting thing. And we want to partner with the Children's Trust on that in terms of service.
Right.
We have some buildings that we want to put in play. And so we have about 39 people RSVP'd. And I think this will be the largest collection of childcare folks from childcare operators.
That's good. That's good. You know, you get a lot of voices with a lot of experience.
Excited.
And not to put a giant exclamation mark underlined and bolded or anything, but your comment is, this is what you are doing with the Children's Trust. The city of Pensacola has established a very functional relationship with the Children's Trust to fund, in this case, you know, childcare and childcare access, which perfectly fits within their mission of preparation and within your mission of doing all the three things you said. I've been talking this morning about the struggles at the county, but so it's good to see. It's good to see that the city is doing this, a little bit more effectively. You were talking about spaces and activities, and I don't really feel like I understand the Southern Youth Sports Association, SYSA, plan for Legion Field. What's going on here? You talked about it yesterday, but I don't understand it.
Yeah, so as you know, there's the Theopolis May Center is already at Legion Field, and we have an arrangement with Southern Youth Sports Association in terms of getting shared use of that building. That, I think that was constructed during the Hayward administration. Flash forward to now, that SYSA has gone out and privately funded what's going to be the Rafferty Center, about $3 million for a building, privately funded, not asking other than the dirt, not asking anything of the city. So, it's
at
funny.
Legion
There's
Field, though, like at that same location.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Contiguous. That right. Contiguous on empty property there. So our contribution to that and what I'm proposing to council on Thursday is that we have a up to maintenance number that we've actually gone and measured with our maintenance and facilities director. Of what we think that would be. And, if our contribution over 40 years of time and we have an opportunity where the city is not having to pay for the building at all, because I was asked the question, well, Mayor, you're very serious about not wanting to maintain more things. Yeah, well, there's two different conversations. One is maintaining aging infrastructure that we neglected, that we're on the hook for no matter what. And then another is someone coming to us and saying, we would like to fund the entire thing. There's going to be maintenance at Hollis T. Williams. There's going to be maintenance at Fricker Center when we redo that. But those we've gotten a combined $50 million of outside money to help construct. So those are two different conversations and the impact on kids. So, we clarified. I know there's been some heartburn with council members over the shared agreement at the existing structure. We clarified some of that, in both the old and the new agreements. And at the end of the day, we've got an organization that's been here a long time that helps support kids, and they're coming in to build a building to work on that support and to give more opportunity for the youth of the city. So So I certainly support it. We'll see what the council's conversation is on Thursday and go from there.
Well, it seems like a big win for everybody. So, it sounds wonderful. Quickly, I just wanted to give people, we haven't talked about this much. I think we might have mentioned it in passing when you were first setting it up. But the Artist in Residence program, when this was first announced,
yeah,
I loved the idea that you'd kind of have, an art major type person who would be in charge of facilitating, informing, not necessarily directing and deciding, but just helping us have a better eye towards beautification across the city, whether it's street art or murals or whatever. That makes sense to me. Is that where are we at?
Yeah. Well, when I came in I always remind folks, in my previous life as a brewery owner, I might have been the biggest mural customer. I had one. I've had several commissioned at my own businesses. And so I've always had a interest in that, not just murals, in art. And,
yeah.
And when I got here, we had had a through ARPA funding and had a full-time position paid for. But we really weren't getting the productivity out of that job that needed to happen. And we wanted to be better stewards of the dollar. I didn't foresee this as a full-time position that the taxpayer needs to be funding. But what we were missing without any representation is someone comes and says, well, we want to put this statue in a park, or mm-hmm. we don't really have that expert seat at the table. And so this is the happy medium that we found. And it helps us engage the art community. It's not just a city employee. This is someone that's integrated in the art community. And what I hope is, and Danny DeCastro is doing it now, and she's amazing. And her job one is to actually set up the program. I mean, so it's sustainable moving forward. And what we would want to see is every year or 2 years that it be a different artist in a different medium, and that they have some type of representation. So not only can they help represent the city in these conversations and about festivals, about all those things where we need some expertise in the room, but it also allows us to do a better job of engaging the art community. Because when we go travel, what do we see? We go look for that. We're attracted to beautiful places and
right.
beautiful art and all of that. So we can better integrate that into our city by having some representation. So it was just about finding that right niche. I don't think zero representation is good. I also don't think the taxpayer that we necessarily are even ready to have somebody full time only working on this. So we're going to take that stepping stone approach and try to use money wisely and see how this goes. So
she had
a big meeting in May 12th with all the artists. So it's been good.
No, I'm a big believer. I mean, I love, as you say, these are the things you notice when you go to a community. It's placemaking. I noticed the murals at PSC when they put up the new art there, and when we're driving along the road or see a statue or whatever, the Bensons put one in
right.
the park, all of that stuff. I love it. More is better, in my opinion. We always like to end with the lightning round. Quick questions, quick answers. What song in the life of DC Reeves do you believe you have heard the most times, if you had to take a guess?
Oh, man. Golly, I think you stumped me. The first thing I think of is Which Annoying Song when I was when Caroline was like 1 or 2 years
exactly,
old.
Exactly, right? Kid songs.
Which one did I not get out of my head? Something from Daniel the Tiger or something probably would be the one that stuck in my head for life.
All right, fair enough.
But, no, I don't know. What was yours?
Oh, so I've heard Jack and Diane, I think, more times than any other song. Not counting like Star Spangled Banner, for example, which is a pretty good answer too, but... for whatever reason, Jack and Diane is the ubiquitous song on, 80s and 90s radio when I'm driving. Would you rather be behind a bad driver, or would you rather pass them and then be in front of them and have them risk running into the back of you? Which one is your preference?
I just go ahead and get out in front of them. I feel like my speed's more predictable than theirs. So I don't know. I heard you
right?
talking about this, but I didn't hear your answer.
I'm gonna
go ahead and get out in front of them.
I'm a passer. I'm a passer. I'd rather pass them.
Yeah.
And, look back in contempt as I'm passing. And then the last one is, and this is actually relevant to your job. So okay, here goes. In your opinion, what's the worst parking lot in Pensacola? The parking lot you avoid because the parking lot experience itself is so frustrating.
Ooh, parking lot I avoid. Well, listen, Andrew, parking's so convenient throughout the city of Pensacola that it's going to be very difficult.
I love all of my parking spaces. They're so beautiful. It's so easy.
Parking spot in the city. Yeah, it's going to have to be in the county or in Santa Rosa or something.
All right, I'll give you the answer, and you'll know it's the right answer as soon as I say it. Fresh Market.
Okay, what is it?
Fresh Market, ninth and Airport.
Oh yeah, getting in and out of that one's a tough one.
No, it's a beast.
You're right.
Yeah, no, that's and everybody agreed that was the absolute worst one. So, hey, while you're fixing problems that aren't your responsibility, if you can get them to do parking better at that, I mean, everybody will love you. Mayor DC Reeves, always a pleasure, sir. We look forward to city council meeting tomorrow night. Thank you as always for the time and safe travels back from Fort Myers.
All right, thanks.